You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to a new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records, a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, celebrity chef Chris Santos. I hate calling myself that. And underground metal connoisseur Matt Bacon, who loves being called that. This is your new favorite podcast for all things heavy metal, as well as breakdowns of your favorite combat sports and riffing on some food talk every week with very special guests from across the globe. All right, people, we're back. We took a brief hiatus after about 60 episodes or so. Took a little break. I got married. No big deal. But we are back.
It was like the sickest wedding ever.
It was a crazy wedding. We can talk about it if we want to. I had Paul Stanley performing and a whole carnival. But honestly, I don't want to talk about that too much. I really want to talk about our guest, a repeat guest, actually, who helped launch this podcast when we started. So welcome back, listeners. We're glad to be back. Today we are with John LaMacchia, who, in my honest opinion, and look, we're boys. He's been one of my best friends for many, many years. He was actually a groomsman in my wedding. So of course I'm biased, but in my opinion, has released one of the records of the year. I am completely blown away by the new record, under the name LaMacchia. Let's welcome John LaMacchia of Candiria, and now of LaMacchia, that, like I said, just put out the most amazing, mind-blowing record of the year so far.
Thanks for having me back, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. We originally wanted to have you on to coincide with the release, but I actually like that we're doing it now, because if we had done it like on release day or a day later, I wouldn't have had a chance to really, you know, sit with the record. And I've been listening to it nonstop. Matt, I'm not sure how much you've listened to it, but it makes me think of, it's like Massive Attack kind of meets Failure in a small way. It's just in the best of both bands. And I'm so fascinated with the record that I have so many questions. And so I'm going to start. Why Thunderheads is the title?
I never heard the term Thunderhead. Never knew that that was a sort of a way to talk about a specific type of storm cloud. And I was upstate on Route 17 driving home from a lake house. I was with Andrea Horn, who actually is a singer and songwriter in her own right, someone very close to me. And we were driving through these mountains, and in front of us was this massive, like, gorgeous sky filled with these ominous clouds. And she looked up and she just said, "Look, Thunderheads." And I never heard the term before.
Whoa, yeah, never heard of that either.
It really stuck with me. And the more I lived with the word, I thought to myself, what a great thing to sort of a great metaphor for the album, because Thunderheads, when you think about them, what they actually are in the natural world, they get filled with so much moisture. They get filled up so much. They basically burst, and they kind of like push out another cloud upward, and a storm brews in them. And it's like, it's ominous. So to me, it just fit as a metaphor for the mental state that I was at. And the person who was my constant companion during the making of this record, Candace Freshco, who co-wrote the song Angel's Delight and performed it. So a lot of the album is based on our experiences together during the pandemic and what she had gone through before the pandemic, but then also she has gone through so much personal stuff. It just seemed appropriate to name the album that.
Well, first of all, it's fascinating. I've never heard of that Thunderheads before, and I'll now look for them in the sky, although we never have rain here in LA, so I'll have to look for it when I'm back east visiting you guys. But Angel's Delight is exactly, I'm glad you brought that song up so early. Like, that is a Massive Attack type of track. It's, the whole record is dark and moody, but not in a way that there's dark and moody, and you, and when you're done listening, you're like, ugh, I'm in a bad mood now, or like, ugh, life is so terrible. Yours is different, and I don't know if I can articulate it, but it's like, it's dark and it's moody, but it's also just, and again, maybe the average listener won't get this. Maybe I get it because I've known you for so long, but it's just, it feels so organic and so right for the times and so obvious that you wrote a lot of this during the pandemic, but it's not dark in a way that it, you go, I can't listen to this because it brings me down. It's not, it's the opposite in some ways. My favorite track on the record, I got to pull these up because I can't pronounce my favorite track on the record. And I need you to help me pronounce it.
Oh.
It's track number 7. I still don't know. I've listened to it 100 times and I don't know how to pronounce it. Pagliacci Kid?
Pagliacci Kid.
What does that mean?
We're talking about this. And Paul Stanley, during his speech at your wedding, mentioned Pagliacci.
Oh, I don't remember that.
So here's the deal. I'm glad you love the song. I'm really glad you enjoy that one. It's true. It's a heavy-hearted song, but there's something about it. Kelly Scott from Failure played drums on it.
Oh, wow.
He really elevated the song. And he brought life to the song I didn't even know it had. But the reason why it's called Pagliacci Kid, Pagliacci is this old opera, this old Italian opera.
I should know that because Natalie's an opera singer. She'd probably be very upset with me if she heard me right now.
So Pagliacci was this old Italian opera about this man who's like betrayed by his wife, and there's like murder and all of this crazy stuff. But the reason why I chose the title is because my Uncle Tony, when we were very young, if you went to a family gathering in Bensonhurst or wherever we were, and you would see him, you would say, hey, Uncle Tony, how you doing? He would say, Pagliacci, kid, Pagliacci. And in other words, he was a very melancholy guy. You know what I mean? That was his life. He was just a melancholy guy. But it wasn't the thing you talked about. Like, it's not like today everybody's like, oh, well, all of the terms that we have now. Back when I was a kid and you were younger, it just wasn't spoken about as much. So that was always his response. And it was funny because you met my cousin Sandy.
Yes.
The one who lived on the same block as Uncle Tony. And she was the one who told me about it on that trip when I was with you and Natalie, when I came to stay with you. We went on a hike in Griffith Park. That was when she told me the story. So this is all really interesting that you mentioned this. This is your favorite track, that Paul Stanley mentioned this at your wedding. Mike MacGyver, when Paul Stanley mentioned Pagliacci, he turned to me, he's like, can you believe that he just mentioned this? And wait till Mike finds out that that's your favorite track in the album. That's awesome.
It's my favorite track, but I mean, but it's hard to, but you know, they're all great. They're all great. So I have a sauna in my home, which I love to use. I use it I don't use it every day, although I try to. They say it's not good for you, but I get in the sauna at least 4 days a week. And my sauna goes up to 176 degrees. And so you preset it gets to 176 and then you go in there, and like pretty much the most I can stand is like 40 minutes of that. It's just brutal. You know what I mean? I believe in it though. I'm a big sauna advocate. We can have another podcast that talks about the benefits of using a sauna, but your record is 37 minutes long. And I can't tell you, Johnny, how many times I have sat in the sauna, and it almost, my wife Natalie meditates. I have tried to meditate. I have actually taken meditation classes. I can't do it. My mind is always racing. I am programmed in a way where my mind is always on fire. I can't fall asleep, or I have a hard time sleeping. But I go in that sauna and I put your record on and I sit back, and it's like a meditative experience for me. It really is, because largely acoustic or electronica, but in a way that's not like, it's not a thrash record. It's not a Kaderia record. You know what I mean? So it puts you in a very relaxed state, but then also just there's a moodiness to that record that it's like my sauna go-to. And it probably is something you never thought you'd hear someone say to you, but that this record is my sauna go-to. Cause I tried to listen to like metal in the sauna and it's like, doesn't work.
Not very metal of you.
Before I turn it over to Matt for some questions, I want to also ask you, this record was obviously a very collaborative effort. You had some great players who I would like you to talk about who they are. Obviously, I know Mike MacGyver is on the record and so on and so forth. But when you write a record like this, and then you go in the studio and you record with the drummer from Failure or Mike from Kandiria or whatever, like, how do you put that puzzle together? Like, how do you write the thing? And then how do you translate the thing? Because it's not like it's one band doing all nine right. songs. It's a bunch of different people doing all nine songs. So explain that process, because I think it's fascinating and I want to learn.
Well, you know, what the challenge was, I think was exactly what you're saying. It's like, how do you fit all these different pieces together now? And it really came down to the mixing engineer, Mario Quintero, who kind of found a way to make all of these songs have some kind of quality that makes them all work together. Honestly, the other part of the problem was the song order. And I have to really give props to my manager, Chris Enriquez, and my label, who I basically handed off that responsibility to them. I told them, I'm like, I'm too close to these songs to really see clearly any type of map. Like, I understand each song. Like, I was like, I know the opener and I know the closer. The middle of it, the rest of it, I could put 50 different, like, you know, song orders
together. Yeah.
And they just worked on it. And they sent me these different ideas and different concepts. And I just, you know, signed off on one in the end. But it was really their hard work and their, I don't know, their excitement about it. They were able to figure it out. They figured it out. And I think that's kind of how it all ties together, is those two key things, is the production and the song order. They just really found a way to make it work.
What about deciding who's playing on what?
Oh, well, that's easy. For me, it was really, you know, Mike was a no-brainer.
Well, first of all, before you answer that question, and I want to know how you figured out who should play on what, but list all the people that were worked on this record with you, if you can remember all of them, because I think it's a pretty big list.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. It's Michael MacGyver from Candiria, who played bass, fretless bass on the whole album. Mario Quintero mixed most of it and mastered all of it. I mixed two songs in the album, Angel's Delight and the last track, Why Are You the Way You Are. Sabrina Ellie did vocals on three songs. Candice Fresco did vocals for Angel's Delight and co-wrote the song and did the spoken word in the last track. Andrea Horn did some backup vocals on a track. She also did vocals on another song or two that did not make it on the record. Kelly Scott from Failure, you know, the star player.
Yeah.
He played drums on the track on three songs. And the rest of it I did myself.
By the way, Failure is playing here in Los Angeles next Friday. I'm going to try to go.
I got to meet Kelly, which was awesome, finally.
Yeah.
But I also had a conversation with Greg Edward. And I have to tell you, I don't get starstruck often.
Oh, yeah.
But that guy, I was with a circle full of people, and he was standing there, and I just approached him. I was like, hey, Greg, what's up, man? And he was like, hi. He was very polite. And the people around me were like frozen, because this is the and I came up with some interesting questions to ask him. And then when I was done and Greg Edwards thanked us and walked away, everyone looked at me and were like, dude, you did good. You did all right.
Well, you know, so a lot of people won't get this reference, but I guess I'll explain it. So to me and Johnny and Jeff Blanchard from Lucky 13 Saloon, and also the band Eyes of the Sun, who's been on this podcast, the three of us are best friends. We've been best friends for 20 years. But because we live apart, and actually, I think this even happened even when we weren't apart, but especially now that we're apart, because I moved to LA, we do like Christmas in July or Christmas in the spring. And we always, it's a ritual. It's actually become a ritual. So even if we could give each other gifts for Christmas on Christmas, we won't do it because this is a tradition. And we always go to Johnny's neighborhood, get like a good Italian meal. We go to this dive bar that's been around for 100 years. But my gift giving thing to all my metal friends is I'm always trying to find like really cool, like vintage t-shirts for the bands they love. So for at least a decade and maybe more, I start every Christmas season going to eBay looking for either a Failure shirt or a Quicksand shirt for Johnny. That's like from the like the 90s. And I've done some good work. I think I've delivered a couple of things. Sometimes I buy them in large. And if you know Johnny, he's definitely a small, but you know, you that's what tailors are for. But anyway, so that must have been an epic moment to, you know, to be able to get the drummer from Failure to, you know, record on the record. That's amazing. And you've been getting overwhelming positive press on this record too, right?
Yeah, I feel very fortunate, man. I have Selena Ferragassi from FRPR working on the album. She's been doing a great job. She does PR for Ministry, the Pixies, all the festivals. So I have some good people in my corner right now, besides Chris Enriquez and Aqualam Records. I mean, I really just do have a really good team. And I'm really grateful. I'm psyched to do something like this. And then people come around and like, it's been like kind of amazing how like, I just decided I was going to do this thing. And then all of a sudden it just like one thing started falling into place. And then the next thing did. And it's been a really great journey. And it looks like this is it for me, man. I'm just going to keep doing this, you know?
That's amazing. That's amazing. And I know I keep holding Matt off, but one last question. I know you're doing live performances of this record. Who's in the band? How are you dealing with that? Because obviously all these players can't be probably doing these shows with you, right?
Right. Live, I have this amazing drummer. His name is Jeff Gensterblum. He plays in The Twin. He plays in a band called Savak. He's an incredible drummer. He's a huge Failure fan, so he's perfect for this. He loves the fact that he's playing Kelly Scott's beats.
Oh, nice.
Michael MacGyver's playing fretless bass in the band. I have Andrea Horn covering most of the vocals, female vocals, and she's playing guitar as well. That's about it. Myself, Candice Fresco does join us on stage to do Angels of Light. She has for the last two of the three shows, I think. So yeah, it's been great. I have a really great band. I'm very psyched. It's just hard. Like, you know, we're all adults. You know how it is. It's hard to get everybody together to do one thing, but we do, we make it work. Everybody's really passionate about it. So I'm pretty psyched that the live band is, you know, once again, like people coming together, like, and I'm amazed, you know, but I'm so grateful. And I can't wait to play more gigs.
Any shot of a tour, even just like an East Coast one, or have you talked about that or thought about that?
Yeah, we have an East Coast run in early August. We're doing a gig out at Mr. Beery's in Long Island on August 5th. Then we're going down to Philly at Ortlieb's in August 6th. And then at Lucky 13 Saloon, we're going to do a big sort of, I want to try to make it like a food, burlesque, and music type of event. So I have some really big plans for that. Me and Jeff have been talking. And I'm hoping that all of our buds come out. And if you happen to be in New York, you have to be there.
No, I'm going to be on my honeymoon, unfortunately. I'll be lounging on the beach, but I'm sure it'll be great. All right, Matt Bacon has not said a word yet, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
Ooh. I told Chris I put on a shirt for this podcast and everything.
Yeah,
I called him 10 minutes before the podcast and he was shirtless and he said, I gotta go put on a shirt, call me back.
No, okay, so a lot of this stuff is obviously very musically distant from Candiria, right? And I was curious because a lot of times what seems to happen when people kind of put out a solo record that's pretty far apart from what they're known for, those songs have been germinating for a long time. Is that the case with you? Have you had some of these songs for a long time, or did they all just kind of come out at once?
No, there's some of the material's been around for some years, and it's just never, there's never been a moment, you know, to actually sort of put them somewhere. And I think what happened with the pandemic was it just gave me, you know, my work just completely stopped. My industry shut down. You know, I'm a musician and I do production work. So it all just shut down. And also in my, you know, the way we were all seeing it was like, well, are we going to have a world in a year, you know? So at that point I was like, you know what? I have absolutely nothing to lose. And this is my opportunity to put these songs together and make them into an album with a theme and deal with whatever I was going through personally and make something beautiful out of it.
What percentage of the songs like existed before and how many were created for this? Like, and then did the stuff that existed before just kind of naturally fall together, or did you have to adapt it so it sort of makes sense as one work?
All of it had to be adapted to fit the theme of the album. All of it had to be reworked to make sense with the themes and the topic, I guess. I struggle with the idea of it being such a topical album. And I know that for me, it was such a cathartic and therapeutic experience. But now that the album is out in the world, I really hope that it is the type of thing where it can, like, other people can connect to the songs and feel something and maybe are able to connect with it and deal with their own shit, you know? And so far I'm getting good responses from people, and their people are definitely connecting with the songs and the album. So, but I'd say that getting back to your original question, I'd say 80% of it was all relatively new enough to be like, no, this wasn't done. And then 20% of it.
Okay. Wow.
This song has been around, you know, these idea, this, the basic idea for the song, the chord progression has been around, the basic melody has been around, but there's no lyrics, there's no music, there's no this, there's no that. So there, the skeletal structures of like a song or two, particularly right. The song Disconnect has been floating around since 2012, I think. And that song just never I was never able to finish it. But when you're going through like the pandemic and then you go to like personal stuff, like losing someone, or, you know, you're like, okay, this is the moment. This is the moment. This is where that song really is like coming back to me, finish the words, and I need to finish it and put it out into the world.
One of the things that, I'm proud of you, I mean, I'm proud of you for everything, but, your vocals and, you know, your vocals were good and Crooked Man, but they're so, are you an opera singer? No. Do you have like King Diamond range? No. But what you're able to do with your voice is you're able to really ignite emotion with the sound of your voice. Like, how much do you, like, I know you're a great guitar player. Do you practice to get to where you were? Is it just organically coming out of you at this point in your life?
You know what it is? I think the thing that wound up happening with me at this point was I just stopped caring about what my voice sounded like. And I think that's a thing with a lot of songwriters are like, I hate the sound of my voice. And for many years, I could never just let go and be like, this is what I sound like. Now just do it right. Do it. And like learn how to sing properly and in pitch. And I do practice a lot. I practice as often as I can. I perform my songs as often as I can. And I continue to try to push myself to do new things so that I can become a better singer, because I really, you know, I have a tendency to sort of, you know, sort of think about things a certain way so that I don't get anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm more of a songwriter and I'm not really a singer. Well, of course you're not a singer because you think like that and you're being negative. But, right, you know, obviously sing well enough to sing my own material. So if I started to actually put technique to it, I can get better and better. So I do. I try to really put, you know, technique to it. The more and more I work on it, the more and more I practice. These songs, though, particularly, I was in a state of mind where I really was alone a lot, you know, besides being around certain people, I had so much time on my hands. So to me, this was my opportunity to really see what I could do vocally as a songwriter. Let me just let go and let me just open up.
Yeah. How long did it take to record the record?
About a year. I mean, write and record.
Right. Okay. Did you record the whole thing like in a 3-week session, or was it just like a song here and a song there?
It was like one song at a time.
Got it.
And there was many more on the cutting board. There was many more. There were several others that were like pretend to go on the record.
Yeah.
But these were strongest and fit the theme, the Thunderheads theme. And I wanted it to have a theme. I wanted it to make sense as a piece, as a whole piece.
It's as if you knew what I was going to say next. This is a perfect segue into what I want to say next. By the way, I think we're all drinking. We can see each other. I think you were having a beer earlier, Matt. I'm having a beer. Johnny's got something in a rocks glass.
Yeah, it's Germany, so the drinks don't count.
Yeah, okay. We've never done this with any artist ever before. This is going to be a brand new, never done before on Delirious Nomads. Oh, by the way, I didn't say Delirious Nomads when I said welcome back to the podcast. So welcome back to Delirious Nomads, everyone. I'm going to call out each track's title, and I want you to give me, you know, give us and the listeners a quick synopsis of why the title is the title. So we'll start with track one, which is called Bled Out.
Bled Out is a song about my experiences with relationships and me exploring polyamory. It's specifically written about someone and the way they inspire me. I'll be honest, it's written about Candace. And when I met Candace and we started hanging out, there was something really wild and open about her. And it's basically a song. It's a celebration about her wild side and her openness and our connection.
Got it.
But that's basically what that one's about.
Okay. And Put You Down.
Deciding it's time to let go and move on.
So next one, Ghost of Tectonic Plates.
A Ghost on Tectonic Plates. Yeah, that one is about sticking around far beyond relationships over. It's like not letting go. This song's about hanging on. That's what that one's about.
And by the way, if you don't want to answer any of these as we go through them, it's totally fine. It's all over now.
It's all over now. That's exactly what it's about.
I don't mean to laugh, but the last three synopsis is amazing. Like, don't hang on too long. Now it's over. That's a great, right. That's actually a great way to put the tracks together on the record order. Angel's Delight.
Angel's Delight was written by Candace. I couldn't answer this plainly. Only she knows because she wrote all the lyrics, but I will go out on a limb and say that song is about our connection, my and Candace's connection. And when we came together during the pandemic, she sings about the sound and how it affected her. Because when we were writing a song, she needed an outlet. She needed something. She needed some artistic shot in the arm. She was completely blown away by the track that I wrote. Literally, she sings about the song that she sings on. It's kind of wild.
Wow. Very nice.
That's really cool. That's a clever concept.
Yeah. Disconnect.
Disconnect is about turning your back on someone for the last time and deciding that's it. I will never go back again.
You know, I can't say it again.
Pagliacci Kid.
We kind of talked about that one earlier.
Pagliacci Kid is actually a song I wrote about Candiria.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's a song about holding on to this idea about how things should have been with that band, or holding on to this idea that I was supposed to wind up with something from all of that work. It was a time when I was just feeling really, really down on myself. And, you know, instead of like turning myself around and be like, don't think that way, I leaned into it. I said, fuck it, I'll go with this severe bout of sadness and depression and self-pity. And right, basically.
Bad Penny.
Bad Penny is written about a person that you know that I dated.
Okay.
Someone who was very...
Got it.
That's written about someone in particular, but it fit the theme of the album.
And Why Are You the Way You Are?
Why Are You the Way You Are is really just a mantra. And it just raises that simple question. Why is anyone the way they are? In the song, there was something missing. It didn't have any spoken word on it yet. And I finished the mix and I was like, you know what? Just something is missing. It can't just be this mantra over and over again. And I asked Anna, because her speaking voice is really beautiful. And I said, you want to do a spoken word over this? Anything, I don't care. And she goes, well, why don't I do a tarot card reading for you? And I was like, oh my God.
That's great.
And she read, and it's, most of it is in the book. It's actually, her entire reading is in the book. When the book finally gets shipped, you'll see.
That's actually another good thing. Well, first of all, thank you for taking us through each track, which are mostly all very personal to you. I appreciate your candor and transparency, and I'm sure our listeners do. But yeah, so tell me about the book. So that's not something you know, when you see, I saw that, you know, it's available and we've got this vinyl and da da da, and it's like, and also we have this book. Like, what's the book?
Well, first of all, Aqualam Records have been putting out books for each album that they release, for each band they release, since they started. That's been their whole thing.
I did not know that.
And it's the main reason why I wanted to work with them, is because I'd never done anything like that. I figured it was something new for me. They're really great designers. They have a great design aesthetic.
When you say a book, is it like a graphic novel, or is it an actual book? Like, explain to me what it is.
I would say it's an art book. It's like an open-ended sort of art book. It's almost like an extended album art book, but it's 120 pages long. And there's lyrical content. There's me discussing each song. There's 30 drawings in there that I did. There's QR codes that lead you to bonus material on websites. There's all kinds of stuff in there. And there's tons of artwork of all kinds, you know, graphic images that I made, photographs that I've taken during the pandemic, a million. It's like a huge thing. To me, it's the one thing I would suggest for people to pick up, because I think it's a very unique and interesting sort of piece of physical media that bands don't usually put out. But I see a lot of artists and record labels are starting to kind of do what Aqualam's been doing for a very long time. Like, a lot of people are putting out books simply because it's just, first of all, vinyl is fucked and no one really wants cassettes or CDs. So books are a way to sort of throw something out there, something else out there in the world that's really artistic. And depending on your level of, you know, your skill level as a writer, you could actually really do something really cool with it. I mean, you know, you put out a book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 120 pages. That's staggering. Like, I can't wait to check this out.
Yeah, it's cool, man. I mean, you know, it's no Paradise Lost or Lord of the Rings trilogy, but it's 120 pages. Not bad for a guitar player from Brooklyn.
not bad at all. And where are you at? Where are you right now? Your dad's?
West Islip on Long Island.
What are you doing there?
I came to visit the man.
For the weekend or 4th of July and everything? Or
no, I could stay. I'm here for the day. I'll stay, spend the night, wake up, we'll have breakfast, and I'll have to hit the road, go home, and get back to work.
Nice. Got it.
Yeah. What song are you proudest of? Then I have a final follow-up. What are you proudest of?
It's a toss-up between A Ghost on Tectonic Plates and Angel's Delight. Angel's Delight may very well be the greatest collaborative experience I've ever had with anyone. And it was such a great experience co-writing that song with Candace. We had so much fun and it was such an exciting process. And you know, when you're just like, when something is just working between you person and you're just, every idea you bounce off, it's just positivity and an excitement and energy that is just so awesome. You're kind of on a high. That's what it was like working with Candace for that song. I mean, it was just, we were we were on fire. We were on fire for this, for this piece of art, you know. And it was really an amazing thing to have during the pandemic, because we needed the distraction, and you know, it was really, like, spiritually, it was really helpful. I'm really proud of A Ghost on Tectonic Plates because it was something that I sing it by myself, no other singer on the song helping me out, which is, you know, it's rare for me. I'm doing more and more of that these days. And it came out of me, like, I don't even remember it happening. It happened so fast. And it's a really beautiful concept. And it's like, it checks all the boxes for, like, a song that I, you know, like, I hear songs sometimes, I'm like, man, I wish I wrote that. This one is like, man, I'm really proud I wrote that. You know, I'm really proud that that came from me. That's the two. It's hard to decide.
Nice.
Now, you were talking about, you know, formulating the songs to fit the theme of the album. How much was left on the cutting room floor? And what does that mean for a sequel?
I would say a good EP, a solid EP. And that's definitely something I want to get out there quickly. Like, I want to do everything I can to promote this album. And I want to play these songs and get the word out into the world. But I definitely do want to jump back into the studio and get another group of songs out as well. And I'm hoping to do that maybe by the same time of the year, maybe May of 2023, I'll have another, you know, group of songs out.
Nice.
You know?
Cool.
Yeah.
Those songs that didn't make it, are they mixed and mastered and you can put it out as an EP if you wanted to, or do you still have to do that stuff?
No, I'd have to really do a lot of work. But that's these days I really just look forward to it. I want to continue working with the same people. I want to work with Kelly again if I can. I want to work with Andrea and Candace and Mike and whoever else wants to come along for the ride. You know, I got some other things up my sleeve too, or some other things I'm working on I really can't mention because I'll get in a lot of trouble. I will be scolded. But there's other stuff as well. So yeah, I got a lot brewing.
I'm not even going to call you so you can tell me privately. I'll wait for the announcement.
Okay, cool.
I think we're good for right now. We don't want to take up your entire night. You're visiting family.
Awesome.
No, yeah, thank you so much, John.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing stories about the songs. For anyone out there that, you know, I don't really care what you like, but if there's a part of you that likes Massive Attack, Failure, most of our listeners, I think a lot of our listeners are, you know, really into hardcore metal. And since we're a Blacklight Media Metal Blade podcast, but, you know, this is a record that I think anyone can appreciate. And you can obviously hear that you put your heart and soul into it. And so you should be very, very proud. And I'm very, very proud of you. And yeah, that's our show today.
Thank you so much.
Everyone have a great night. Everyone, I hope you enjoyed this. Thank you so much, Johnny. We are out. All right. So that was awesome. Thank you everyone out there for listening to Delirious Nomads, sponsored by Blacklight Media. We will be coming back at you next week with another awesome guest. Be sure to follow Blacklight Media on socials for new music and more, and above all, keep it heavy.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.